right.
That was Paul Chambers. Paul Chambers, you know, because he played with the great Miles Davis, but this is a piece he did in 1956, Whims of Chamber, and Paul Chambers was born on this day, and we will celebrate his music. Paul Chambers born on this day in 1935, passed away in 1969, check out his music from the 50s. He's an amazing bassist, and Paul Chambers on this day. So we are now joined by Sarah Love for a few minutes here at the beginning, top of our discussion. She's public policy director of the ACLU of Maryland. Sarah, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Mark. Glad to be back.
So let me hear very quickly from you before we talk to our delegates here, your highs and lows.
Well, we had a great session this year. The ACLU of Maryland had a number of priority bills, and we worked with a bipartisan coalition to get most of them passed, so we're pretty excited. I'll start off with our privacy and technology package. This is a package that says technology is wonderful, and we want law enforcement to use the latest and greatest, and we want them to protect our privacy while using that technology. So we had Republican sponsors and Democratic sponsors. Our two lead sponsors in the Senate were Senator Jamie Raskin, a Democrat from Tacoma Park, and Senator Chris Schenck, a Republican from Washington County. And there were four main bills. There was one to make sure before law enforcement can track you using your cell phone or another piece of electronic equipment, they get a search warrant. Your cell phone sends off a signal every couple of seconds, and law enforcement has and can use that to track your movements. And our position was, if you want to do that, you need to have probable cause to believe that I have or am committing a crime. So that bill passed. We had another bill that said, if law enforcement wants to read your emails or any of your online content, again, they need to get a search warrant. That bill passed. We had a bill that was to regulate drones. Drones are coming to America. We've all heard about the possibility of Amazon delivering by drones. Well, we at the ACLU and our sponsors are concerned that as law enforcement get drones, that they have the rules in place so that if they want to search a private place using a drone, they get, again, a search warrant. Unfortunately, some of the legislators felt that that bill was too soon. Not a lot of our law enforcement agencies have drones, so they weren't ready to pass that bill yet. And then our final bill on our privacy and technology package has to do with automatic license plate readers. These are readers that scan every license plate that go past. There are about 411 readers in the state. They tag them with a date, time, and location, and run them against various databases, so Amber Alerts, terrorist alerts, that sort of thing. We would like some data retention policies on that so that our government isn't keeping a massive database of Marylanders' whereabouts. We got a lot of pushback from law enforcement on that, so we passed a first step sort of bill that just puts in place an auditing policy and some other policies if you're going to use these readers. So that was the first part of our package. We also had Republican and Democrat sponsors in the House, so that was exciting.
So now where do you see, what were the disappointments for the ACLU in this last session?
Well, the drones and not getting the license plate readers, I think, were disappointments. Two of our other we had three other priority bills. One, you're talking to Delegate Mary Washington later. We worked with her on a bill to ban the shackling of pregnant women.
And we can talk about that. Yep.
Yep, that was a highlight. That passed. You and I have talked a lot about marijuana policy reform. We got a decrim bill passed. So that was a highlight. I think one of our lowlights was the Trust Act. Now, this is an act to get local law enforcement out of the immigration business.
Right.
And that bill didn't pass. So that was one of our disappointments from this session.
And then there was that piece very quickly. We'll talk about this more with our delegates here in a moment. It was around the those who support the boycott of Israel, and that was a bill that was in the state legislature that was put out, but it was ended up in the budget.
Right.
Kind of sneaking its way through there.
Yes. Yes, you and I had a good conversation about that bill.
Yes.
As well. You know, that was a really interesting bill, and it brought together a lot of questions about Middle East policy and a lot of passions and First Amendment issues, which is what brought the ACLU into it. So in its final form, it was budget language, which is more advisory language than a law that is passed by the General Assembly.
Right. I guess what irked me more than anything else is the fact that it just even got into this kind of sneaky way of putting things into the budget, just putting it out there. Because then, even though it's not a law, it becomes a tenor, a sense of what should be.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which I think is dangerous in our world.
I agree with you, Mark, and I think a lot of the language was a lot more inflammatory than was necessary.
I agree completely. It's funny how we agree on so many things, Sarah Love.
I love that, Mark.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Always good to talk to you. Sarah Love, of course, Public Policy Director for the American Civil Liberties Union of Maryland. And we're going to take just a couple seconds break here and come right back. We're jumping right into it. Good. I'm following my producer's lead. She says, no, start talking. We'll do that. So here we are with our three delegates. We're here with Delegate Mary Washington's in the studio. She represents the 43rd District here in Baltimore City. Good to have you with us.
It's great to be here.
And Delegate Mary Shalega is with us. She is the House Minority Whip and represents District 7 in Baltimore and Harford County. Kathy, good to have you back with us.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
And Delegate Dan Morheim, Dr. Dan Morheim, delegate representing Maryland's 11th District in Baltimore County. He's also a physician. Good to have you with us, Dan.
Great to be with you.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Let me remind you on the way to this conversation, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to Common Core, you can learn more about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and students and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's one word, MarylandEducators.org. Let me begin this way with the three of you. And folks, please join us what you think is important and not important and what happened and what your thoughts are about this last session at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at SteinerShow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages or you can tweet me at Mark Steiner, phone at the ready here, 410-319-8888. This is Earth Day. So I just want to start this way, even though it didn't get a lot of news. It seems to me that according to our conversations with former state senator Jerry Weingrad, who was commenting for our production soundbites this week and last, he gave a pretty abysmal rating to the delegates and the senators this year when it comes to the environment, with the question of phosphorus being pushed away, the testing being pushed away for another year, what happened with wind energy, what happened with the discussion of Poultry Fair Share Act and more, that he found this to be not a year that was very positive for the Chesapeake Bay or our environment or the future of the environment. What are your comments on that? Dan?
Well, Jerry Weingrad's a great guy. We served together many years ago on the before I got elected, actually, on the Maryland State Recycling Council, and he is certainly one of the strong leaders for the environment. I try to look at this as a 4-year cycle. We're ending a 4-year cycle of legislation with this group of legislators, and there's always room for criticism, but I'm proudly speaking personally of my endorsement from the Maryland League of Conservation Voters and the voting record that collectively we have obtained. We have done some good things. We expanded electronic recycling. We did support wind energy. We passed legislation promoting green buildings. Buildings use half the energy in the United States, and to the extent that you save money there, the best dollar spent in energy is the dollar you don't spend. We passed legislation that put solar panels on all new school construction. So there were quite a few things that were accomplished. Obviously, there's always room for more. I had a bill that did not pass. If I'm reelected, I'll be back next year with it, that deals with the chemicals used in fracking from a health perspective, because they're pretty dangerous and people need to have full disclosure from the companies of their proprietary information. So I think we made progress on a lot of fronts. Of course, never as many as everybody would like.
And Madam Whip, how do you look at it?
I have to say probably one of my biggest disappointments in the last session was the lack of action on the rain tax. And while all of us, every one of us who lives in Maryland loves the Bay and cares about it deeply, I think that the rain tax is a wrong-headed approach to solving pollution in the Chesapeake Bay. Asking 10 jurisdictions in the state of Maryland and in the entire watershed, it's 19%, to address this problem is just a wrong way to approach it. We had a couple of measures in that would look at the Conowingo Dam, which we know needs to be addressed, and I just saw the whole thing as a failure to act.
And your thoughts, you can start with the stormwater bill if you like.
Oh, sure. Hello. This is a conversation that my colleague and I, we continue to have, and I look forward to continuing it for the next 4 years. the stormwater management fee, I think is actually a compromise. In terms of the idea that 10 jurisdictions bear the responsibility for funding this program, it's because, frankly, we're the ones that contribute most, the majority of the pollution, the non-point pollution to the Bay. Regarding the comment about it being lackluster. Again, I agree with my colleague that we have done a lot over the last 4 years. And as a member of the budget, the Appropriations Committee, we've actually contributed more than $500 million. This year has been allotted for environmental programs to protect the Bay and our drinking water. So both of these are important priorities. It's a lot of folks thought we weren't going to do very much this session. It turns out we have done quite a lot, particularly in areas where things have were moving slowly and then have passed.
Well, I'm not going to stay on this too long, so I'm going to cover all these, a lot of issues to call them and get to the phones and cover these other issues. But, I mean, the risk assessment tool around phosphorus was supposed to go into effect this year, didn't go into effect this year. The governor did not push it very hard, neither did the leadership of the House or Senate.
Again, I guess I'm just going to jump in, and I think the earlier point is that we are a deliberative body. We are a body of a lot of various different interests. So I believe we've moved very quickly over the last 4 years and deliberately, and I think this is a time while I did not support that decision, I think the body as a whole decided, let's take a pause, let's evaluate all the programs that we have in place about how we measure our success is a moving target, and I think we'll be able to fix it next year.
410-319-8888 is the number here. And Grace in Pikesville, you're on the air.
Thank you, Mark. I just want to find out if there isn't a law passed about cars parked in driveway with no tags, grass growing under it, and it's really disturbing to my neighbors in the neighborhood. The association is not doing anything about it, and so I would like to know if there is a law that passed that they're not supposed to have cars that don't have no tech. Been there for 8 years, just sitting there.
That's a good question. I don't know anything about that. Any three of you delegates know?
I would assume that that's a city ordinance, we're state legislators, and certainly in Baltimore City.
And she's in the county, Pikesville.
Oh, you're in the county. Okay,
yeah.
Hey, well, then I think that's
one being,
that's yours.
Pikesville being in my district. Grace, why don't you contact my office, Delegate Dan Warheim, 410-841-3054, and we'll try to deal with it. But as my colleague just said, we're state legislators. I'm not aware of any such law, but we would certainly let the county officials know if there's a local ordinance nuisance issue that we can help you with.
So I'm going to ask each one of you the question here very specifically about the highlights for you and the problems you might have had with this session. But let me just start out with a question for you, Mary Washington, and then go to Delegate Shalega. Last year, we did a number of shows with you, and you were in part of that show, obviously, about the issue of shackling women inmates who are pregnant and getting checkups and also having a child. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it had such vehement opposition last year. What changed this year? Why did it just kind of seem to sail through? And with very little opposition, what changed?
Well, I think my first comment will be sort of still waters run deep. And so I think that the final House version didn't pass until the very end.
Right.
But I think
this
is an example. My colleague and I, as members of the Women's Caucus, came together, again, cross party lines, and in fact agreed that this was a priority of the Women's Caucus. It was also, we worked very closely with the ACLU. And so I think it was a matter of we came to a place where I think people understood that this needed to happen. I think, frankly, what happened over the last year with regard to the detention center and the inability of that administration to
the scandal
manage
of the Black Royal Family.
Absolutely, yeah, right, to right, manage right. that level of policy, I think we were able to make the argument that we would suggest that if there were difficulties enforcing something like cell phones, that it was in our rights of the state to really make it very clear to standardize across jurisdictions that there will be no restraining of pregnant women during labor or delivery, and to make sure that their postpartum recovery is fair and humane. And I think maybe Delegate Schlegel might want to comment as well.
Delegate, you want to comment on that too before we go to break?
I was happy to support Mary Washington with that initiative. I thought it was important. I worked with her last year on that as well. And it was one of those women's caucus issues that was not a partisan issue. So it was great to have that we could all rally around and get behind.
And I'd just like to say the men supported it too.
Important point, Dan Morheim. It is an important point. I think it is. I mean, I remember covering it last year. It was such a different, so different this year.
Mark, if I could say one thing.
Go ahead, Dan.
The Delegate Jim Hubbard, who's retiring, has a number of outstanding perspectives. And one thing he says is bad bills pass in one session, good bills take years. I mean, I've seen that to be true. There are some good bills that pass in 1 year, but a lot of times these things take time. It's hard to explain, even for us in the process, to understand why. But that's an obvious bill that needed to pass, and I'm glad we passed it and we all supported it.
And when we take a short break, we are going to come back, and I want to hear the highlights and the lights from Delegate Schlegel's point of view. I want to hear about the bill that Dan Morheim put together on regulating charitable assets. I want they didn't get covered much in the press. I want people to know about that. But I also want to talk about power in the Senate and the House. I have a very specific question about that when I come back around certain bills that did or did not come out of the Judiciary Committee. So I want to kind of throw that question to our guests. And you can join us here at 410-319-8888. We are going out here. What you can hear under me right now is Earl Hines, Boogie Woogie, on the St. Louis Blues. And on this day, we lost Earl Hines, and we are going to celebrate his life with his music on this day. He passed away in 1983.
Ain't much that's left here. That ain't all run down. Gone are the echoes of old familiar sounds. Families that scattered.
That's Hazel Dickens, Hills of Home. She died on this day in 2011 at the age of 75. And Hazel Dickens was on this show once many moons back, and she was one of America's great songwriters. They'll Never Keep Us Down, Working Girl Blues. She talked often about class struggles and what she believed in and unions she believed in and cross-racial lines as a country singer, white and black. She was an amazing woman, and glad I had a chance to meet her before she passed away. So we honor her on this day of her passing, Hazel Dickens. We are here with three of our exceptional delegates, Delegate Dr. Mary Washington, who represents the 43rd District here in Baltimore City, Delegate Kathy Schlegel, who is the House Minority Whip and represents District 7, Baltimore and Ann Arbor counties, Delegate Dr. Dan Morheim, who represents the 11th District in Baltimore County and is also, of course, a physician. You're no longer the only physician, right, Dan?
I'm the only physician.
You're still the only physician. Still the only physician. 410-319-8888.
I am the Maryland Nurse Association Legislator of the Year this year. So that's really first time they ever gave it to a doctor, but we're working together, doctors and nurses and all the health people.
Congratulations. 410-319-8888. Let me ask this question before I turn to Mary Schlegel to talk about her highs and lows, and then we can wrestle with those. Kathy. But, you know, I was looking at kind of the power of the way power lives in the Assembly. I have to ask you all this question. And I'm thinking very specifically about Chairman Valerio of the Judiciary Committee. And so, you know, when a chairman doesn't want a bill to come through, he or she can put it in their drawer. And it's happened on almost every committee this year at some level. And it doesn't see light of day. And some people think that's a fairly undemocratic process. Some of us do anyway. And, you know, the like several bills really struck me this year, like the Rape Survivor Family Protection Act, which said that a rapist would not have a parental right or say in anything that goes on. It also allows a woman's name to be divulged if her rapist can't be found. That protective orders, that sexual assault and dating violence, it can only be peace orders and not protective orders, which go a long way to help women, especially women who are in trouble in domestic abuse situations. Human trafficking, not becoming a felony for victims under the age of 21. The fact that whether you agreed with it or not, the highest court in the state of Maryland said that you have a right to lawyers at bail. Yet the leaders of the House, at least the Senate, I should say, and the governor's mansion, just decided not to ignore it and say, we don't care what they said, and we're going to do a bill to kind of circumvent it. Those kind of power relationships, it seems to me, are one that disturb a lot of Marylanders. I'm just curious how you see that, and also some of these kind of very critical bills in terms of the rights of victims and the rights of those who have been arrested fare pretty badly under that system. Your thoughts? Who wants to jump in this first? Delegate Shalika, why don't you start?
Sure, I'd be happy to. We had a bill, the House Republican Caucus had a bill this year that would have required every bill to get a vote out of committee, up or down. So clearly we agree with you. We think there should be more transparency. And, you know, every bill should get its day and up or down. But I will also like to comment that there are 6 standing committees in the House. And from the House Republican Party, we have to say that we think Chairman Valerio is pretty inclusive of our party. And some of the chairmen there are not. But, you know, when he makes decisions, our members, minority members on that committee, most feel pretty included and heard. And although at the end of the day, you know, we're most likely not going to get our way, what we do feel like we get heard there.
That's important. And I understand why you take that position. But, Dan, you know, one of the things that people like Valerie and others have done is, like, when they don't want something to happen, it doesn't happen. Allowing the bail bondsman to have a private session behind closed doors so they could not be questioned when it came to this question of lawyers at bail. I mean, to me and to many of us, this is very disturbing.
Well, and I will say in appropriations, and Mary Washington and I have been on that committee together for 4 years. This year, I was astounded and shocked after we voted the budget out, and as you know, the legislature withheld $300 million from their commitment to the public pension fund. Our chairman let the head of AFSCME and the head of the teachers union address our committee. And that, you know, it was unusual, and I can say I didn't think it was appropriate.
Mary, go ahead, then we'll go to Dan.
Well, I guess just by way of clarification, that was a vote that was a part of a public session, and any public session, anyone who's in attendance is able to be asked to be heard. I'll just say that. So it was kind of said in the same sentence as a backdoor meeting, but it wasn't. It was an open session where we cast a vote, and it is unusual, but it is not against the rules, and I think more people should come and look at the record and look at the schedule and come and comment on the work that we do. I mean, more transparency is better, so I absolutely support the idea that more of what we do should be transparent and easily understandable by the public.
I mean, and I just don't want to pick on that one particular committee, Dan. I mean, and somebody who I have a huge respect for, who's been a friend for a good 30 years of my existence, Delegate Maggie McIntosh, who chairs the Environmentalist Committee, put the fracking bill and shut the door on it in her drawer. I mean, so, you know, these things are disturbing.
Well, I could understand the public's concern. And frankly, for many of us in the legislature, those kinds of things are frustrating. But sometimes bills go into the drawer that many members want to have stay there. And so, you know, sometimes it works for you, sometimes it works against you. Each committee has its own culture. It can be very frustrating at times for members of the legislature as well. We have passed a number of significant transparency bills over the last few years. In fact, created a standing committee on it, on that very subject. All House hearings are public. People are welcome. In fact, you can watch them online. I was out of town for a couple of days because blessed with the arrival of a new granddaughter, and I actually watched the committee hearings online from New York. So I kept up, and you know, the public can do that too. And they're much more transparent in the House, where it's in video form. One thing on voting on all bills, sometimes there's 5 or 6, 7 bills on one topic. And as a political process, they're often merged into one, or parts are merged into different bills. I'll just think of one good example of one of Mary Washington's bills, Joint Committee on Homelessness, which was really an excellent bill. Another legislator had a bill that had to do with veterans' homelessness. So we combined those two, and the veterans one went into the drawer. It wasn't a bad thing. Everybody agreed to it. There was just no reason to vote that down when the issues it had raised were well taken care of in Mary Washington's excellent bill. And as a board member of Healthcare for the Homeless, I thought it was great, and we passed that bill unanimously. So it's not always a bad thing that a bill goes into a drawer. Sometimes when there's 3, 4, 5, 6 bills on a subject, one becomes the vehicle, and that's what passes. And we've done that with medical marijuana a few times as well, which Kathy Saliga was a staunch supporter, and thank you also, Mary Washington, and the Republican Minority Leader Nick Kipke was one of the sponsors as well. So we work bipartisan in a lot of areas.
Well, there are areas we do, especially non-economic areas. There's a lot of bipartisan cooperation, I think, in the House and Senate. There's another bill that last year was going to have no chance of passing, didn't pass, was going nowhere, but this year again passed, which was a shock to see how it happened, which was the Transgender Equality Bill. Again, I was kind of really surprised by the lack of vociferous opposition.
Well, there was a lot of vociferous opposition that came through my subcommittee and the committee that I'm on, and actually defended the bill on the House floor a few years ago when it passed the House. It didn't pass the Senate, so we were waiting for the Senate to act. There was a lot of intense and heated discussion on that, lasted for quite a few hours. So, you know, but it was one of those bills that, after some of the other things that had passed, same-sex marriage, not only passing the legislature but being validated by the voters, there was one more group that the legislature felt needed protections and some basic housing, public accommodations, finance, and employment. And all this, when people do have complaints, they will go through the state Civil Rights Commission. Just some numbers on that. They get about 600 complaints a year. About 300 are dismissed. Of the remaining almost 300, almost all, with the exception of less than 5, are resolved by just having the folks sit down and work it out, because most people are pretty good, and when they get a chance to talk in a formal session, their issues work out. Only a few go on to any sort of civil court issue. So that's where those kinds of problems will go, to the extent that they happen in the future.
Kathy, let me just go to Kathy and come right back over to you, Mary. Kathy?
Yes, I vociferously opposed that bill myself personally. I think it was poorly crafted, and I think it opens the door for people who would nefariously use that law, because the standard of proof that someone is a transgender is that they believe in their heart. And I think that I've been very vocal about this. We should have excluded bathrooms, locker rooms, changing rooms from that. I believe that people who are mentally ill, who are pedophiles, could use that opportunity to get into women's bathrooms, restrooms, and changing rooms. And, you know, we had an amendment to correct it, and that train was running down the tracks, and it was, you know, nothing was going to stop it. So there may be efforts to petition that to the ballot because of that poorly crafted bill. Now, of course, you know, no one wants discrimination in housing and that type of thing. But, you know, in the end, they did not protect women and little girls, not from people who were transgenders. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about people who would nefariously use that opportunity. And I was adamantly opposed to that bill.
With regard to the last comment, thank you, Mary Washington, 43rd District. With regard to the last comment, we have existing laws on the books that actually protect women and children against sexual assault of any kind. And additionally, I think what was just articulated was a lot of the unfair stigma that in fact leads to the discrimination that transgendered persons experience on a daily basis. Delegate Pena Melnick from Prince George's County was an excellent, she was the floor leader for this debate, and again, number of hours where false claims, situations that did not apply to this population were introduced as a mean to inject fear. Anytime that individuals are asking for their rights under the law to be treated fairly on a number of factors, these same arguments are introduced. This bill has been in effect, or this law has been in effect in Baltimore City since 2002. And a number of, there's been no cases documented or even suggested that present the scenarios that were proposed by the opposition.
And actually, if I can add one other thing on that, a few years ago, when this bill was there and didn't have public accommodations in it, just housing, employment, and financing, the same people who opposed this year's version opposed last year's version, although this year's version they said that they opposed it because of the public accommodations part. But when they had the opportunity to vote for the bill without public accommodations a few years back, the same opposition opposed it. So, you know, if they really support that, they should have voted for it a few years ago.
So, Delegate Shalega, let me ask you this before we go to Dan Moorheim. I want to ask a very specific question to him and then cover some other bills before the end of the hour. I encourage our listeners to join us at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts on this last session. So, Delegate Shalega, give me a highlight, lowlight for you in this session.
Well, I'd say the highlight was the estate bill that passed that unites Maryland's estate tax with the federal. It will happen in 2018. I think that's good. I think states have already been taxed at least once, usually more than once, and that the government should not get what the heirs, what someone has saved for their heirs to have. And more importantly, I think it really points out what Republicans have been saying. The more you tax something, the less you get it. And over the last 10 years, Maryland has lost $5.2 billion in income, people who've left our state. The data is out at howmoneywalks.com. You can click on Maryland. You can click on your county, on the city, and see whether you have been a winner or loser with money and where it's migrated. And no one will be surprised to know that a lot of our money has gone to Florida because it's a, you know, tax haven for people. And so I was really thrilled that finally we've been introducing this bill for 7 years. It finally did pass. But again, more importantly, it people are conceding that, yes, at some point taxes do drive people out of our state.
So Delegates Moorheim and Washington, do you have thoughts on any of that?
I'll talk about a couple of other things if I can.
Well, let me ask this question.
I did vote for that bill, but
which bill did you vote for?
The one that Delegate Zuliga just mentioned.
So, tell me, why did you vote for that bill?
I'd rather take my time and move on to something else.
No, we are going to go somewhere. I just want to.
Yeah, I think she said the points, and you know, these are always things that people wrestle with. I think at this point, on the balance of, and I don't vote for all tax decreases, and I don't vote against all tax increases. We, you know, the same one that seemed its time was there.
That affects the top 3% of Marylanders.
Yeah,
right.
And I think it was reasonable to align it with the federal government. You know, it's one rule is simpler than multiple. But can I say some other things?
You can, but Delegate, let me just ask you a question. We'll right to you. I do want to come right to you because the issues that you, especially charitable assets, but you voted against this bill.
Oh, I did. You know, it looks like in a couple of years, it'll introduce a deficit of about $139 a year. Also, I thought it was, you know, we were also contemplating trying to focus on raising people's minimum wages. We neglected to provide protections for tip workers. We've expended it over a number of years. And for me, I couldn't vote for that bill, given what we were doing to working class people in our state.
Now, Dan, you wanted to highlight. I know you wanted to jump in here with another thought. Go ahead, please.
A couple things. There was a few unsung heroes, and one I did want to. And I'm glad medical marijuana passed. A number of other good things. I did vote for the minimum wage increase, and would have, you know, supported a little bit more of that if that had been available to vote for. I did get one bill passed that flew under the radar. It has to do with charity
right.
regulation. We
right.
have had in Maryland a very poor system of regulating not the good charities, but the scam charities. Marylanders give over $1 billion a year in charity. Probably several hundred million goes off into various scams. They're con artists. They call you up and say, and they have nice websites and nice sounding names that would help people with certain diseases or veterans or firefighters. But less than 5%, in some cases less than 1% of the money actually goes to those to the needy people. It's just scammed off through a variety of ways. And we just did not have solid regulations on that in our state. And we did pass a bill, House Bill 1352, unanimously supported by the Attorney General's office, the Secretary of State's office, and the Maryland nonprofit community. And that provides, I won't go into details, but provides the authority and the regulatory support to weed out the bad charities. Marylanders are generous people. When we give money to charity, we ought to be reasonably assured that it's going to the right cause that we're supporting. So that was a very dense and complicated bill to work out, but I'm glad that passed. My biggest disappointment, the health care exchange rollout. I support a lot of health care reform ideas. We passed some very good ones this year.
Yeah.
But I still can't understand or be able to explain to my constituents how you spend $50 to $200 million on a website that doesn't work. Just very disappointing with that particular process, and I don't think we've really gotten to the bottom of it, and we're still trying to fix it. So that's most of my biggest disappointment. It was not a legislative issue. We didn't have a bill to vote on that, but that was probably my biggest disappointment of the year.
Well, the question about that, especially the latter one there, I mean, if we have time, I didn't come back to minimum wage and also the estate tax again. But I was kind of taken aback again that the House and Senate did not institute some kind of investigative committee to see what happened to all this taxpayers' money. When it comes to putting this health exchange together, you look at Kentucky, other states that started after Maryland, created systems that really worked. I mean, and I think people deserve it. And I know it involves Lieutenant Governor Brown because he's running for governor and all the rest, but I don't really care about that. I mean, what I care about is what happens to the money that we taxpayers spend and what happened to it and why. And don't we think that Maryland citizens deserve an answer?
Yeah, I think you're right, and I'm disappointed that more investigative process wasn't undertaken. There was some, and that did move in the right direction. I think the problem is with the makeup and the operation of the state health care exchange. If you look at its board, it didn't have anybody that had any background in IT or business, and I was also concerned that we suspended some of the rules of procurement, which I opposed a couple of years ago when this came up, because I deal with that issue in the Government Operations Subcommittee. We suspended some of the rules of procurement, and then when you do that, those rules are there for a reason, and then you can sometimes get in trouble. I think you can both try to fix the system and understand the mistakes that were made so that they're not repeated or compounded. I don't think you need to do one or the other. I think you do both at the same time, and I don't think we did as good a job on that as we could have.
Yeah, I fully agree with Dan Moorheim. Our House Republican Caucus had sent a few letters off to the governor, to Anthony Brown, to Speaker Bush, and asked exactly for an investigative committee. And interestingly, Anthony Brown was on the Jane Miller show on Channel 11 News, and he called for a legislative committee to investigate the health exchange. But that was all political posturing, clearly, because they did nothing to set something up. There is a small committee that meets. I think Dan's on it. But that was to look forward.
No, I'm not on it.
You're not, oh, my gosh. How can you not be on it? Well, that's a problem, too. Our only physician, our only health care specialist in the House isn't on the committee. So, Mark, you know, I agree with Dan, the biggest disappointment that it's, you know, when we do the math, it's going to be $300 million of taxpayer dollars, you know, federal dollars and state dollars, both come out of our pockets. And it's really a shame.
$300 million.
And I'm putting this in the context for me, in the context of supporting, the Affordable Care Act to a significant degree and the health care reform that we've done in Maryland. So I'm not opposed to any of that. I'm strongly in favor of those kinds of things and many of the other things that we try to deal with to improve health care access and quality, which is a whole separate discussion. This was the tough part. But I'm glad we passed medical marijuana. I'm glad we passed charities. I'm glad we passed charity regulations, some of the other stuff.
Do you have a question?
Pretty well.
Comment on this, Delegate?
No, I look forward to us over the next 4 years really working this out. It was such a huge change we tried to do all at once. And I am – that's – it's not my largest disappointment. I would have liked to have seen us fully really provide, a larger chunk for pre-kindergarten expansion. There's a number of things in the areas that was articulated early in the hour around protective orders and human trafficking and
really bringing all of the
issues around bail bonds and a number of things that we do in those areas. I'd like to see us moving forward. But again, this was such a the part, I guess, where we did do well was the expansion of Medicaid and bringing more people under Medicaid. And there are today a lot more people covered who were not covered last year. Now, our job as legislators is to go forward and to make sure that it's working for all Marylanders.
Yeah, the Medicaid expansion, Mary's quite right, was very significant. And that was kind of an automatic part of this program. But the other part that we did change is some of the other ways healthcare will be financed in the state through the hospitals,
right,
and be more of a global budget, which I think will be done well with attention to details and including providers of all at all levels, doctors, nurses, in the discussion, so that we do better prevention, things like that.
Before we get run out of time, I'll start here with Delegate Mary Washington. We have about 4 or 5 minutes left. What happened with the minimum wage, and why was it pushed off another year? That to me, watching that going back and forth of those who do support the rise in minimum wage is fairly disappointing. I mean, now to 2018, by that time, it might be meaningless.
Yeah. What happens, perhaps we should have, and Delegate Shalega and I could come on and talk about the budget process, but one of the things happens is once the two houses pass, there's something called a conference committee that then continues the negotiations. And part of the issue is on the House side, we did not increase wages for people who are working with individual disabilities. And so part of that, and that was going to contribute another $30 million into the overall state budget. And so I'm just saying that what happened then was that was a part of that negotiation. Again, I'm very disappointed that was moved forward, but it was part of that sort of exchanging, I think. I wasn't on that conference committee, but the swapping out of, okay, if we're going to do this, we should move it forward.
But, I mean, it seems to me that, like, this from an outsider's point of view and not someone who's a legislator, is that – you know, we see the House and Senate can pass a bill that gives the top 3% a tax break, but we can't raise the minimum wage for the bottom part of our state to live a better life. And we're only talking about $10.10 an hour. And I defy anybody on this radio program right now to live on $10.10 an hour and try to raise a family, find a place to rent and buy food. So I just that to me was kind of the glaring kind of double-edged sword here, two sides of this issue, where the richest get something and the poorest do not.
And then in terms of what the populations that are affected, two of the bills that, again, I worked with my colleagues here on the phone to pass had to do with unaccompanied homeless youth and in general on working in the homeless populations. And some of the individuals who find themselves experiencing homelessness are working for minimum wage and not able to afford to have stable housing. So I think going forward, we need to begin to join some of our social service needs that we put out as a state, the monies that we spend, and look at the way our business regulations are conflating or perhaps exacerbating some of our social service needs. And then we could perhaps drive down and share some of those expenses.
So we have only like literally 2 minutes left. And Kathy Shalega and Dan Morheim, I want to give you at least a little bit of time, a second here, to kind of wrap up your own thoughts. Kathy?
Yeah, sorry about that. I was on mute, so you wouldn't hear any background music.
We have like two minutes left.
Yeah, well, I have to say that, the minimum wage issue is important, but minimum wage was never meant to be a wage you lived on. All of us climbed the ladder, our career ladder. We all started at the bottom. I mean, I was 14 and worked in a donut shop. I'm sure everybody has a story.
But you weren't 25 and working for $10 an hour.
No, but you know what?
Right?
When I was a maid, I was a dishwasher. I mean, I did all of those jobs, as did most of you and your listeners. And we thought a better answer to that would be to increase the earned income credit and increase job training, because the goal is not to live on minimum wage.
So
that is a
That is a job for people who are entering the workforce, not for someone that's in their career. So we need to help people get on the career ladder, get up the career ladder, and make more money.
I'm sorry, Kathy, I have to wrap up here. It's not sure. I'm not trying to interrupt because I don't to stop what you're saying. We literally have like 30 seconds left before we have to go to the next hour. And this has been a great conversation. The three of you are wonderful to come on always. Delegate Kathy Shalega, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, everyone.
Minority Whip and Delegate Dr. Dan Moorheim, always great to have you with us, Dan, and congratulations on your grandfatherhood.
Thank you, Mark.
And Delegate Mary Washington, Delegate Dr. Mary Washington, good to have you in the studio as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to remind you on the way out of here, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Go to www.mecu.com. We are listening to Richie Havens, his version of Eleanor Rigby, the best one ever done. Guest on the show twice in the past, passed away on this day in 2013. We lost a great singer. Stay with us. And Soundbites coming up next. Don't go away for this Earth Day special. By her.